Welcome back, everyone. This is The Change Show with Simon Phillips. I'm hugely excited about today's show. I've got the founder of KLDR, Leadership Development Radio, with me today, Chris Ceballero. And I'm going to quiz him on all things leadership, how he's leading the station even. And we'll see where that takes us. So, Chris, welcome. How are you doing?
Simon, I have to tell you, I am so excited to be here. I woke up this morning with an extra spring in my step, knowing that I was going to talk to you today and engage the listeners. And it is my honor to be here and have a great conversation.
Fantastic. So why don't we start at the beginning? I know Stephen Covey always says start with the end in mind, but let's start at the beginning and get an idea of what was it, do you think, thinking back to your early career, what were the sort of defining moments that, looking back, you can see, that's how I ended up in this leadership coaching arena?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's a great question. When you talk about change, I mean, it's really the transformation of who we are to who we become that really kind of gives us our future direction. And my, I grew up in New York City, and it was a very, very interesting way to grow up, very, very tough way to grow up. And my past is all based on ego. It's all based on arrogance. It's all based on aggression. It's all based on, trying to be the toughest person that I could be to survive high school, to survive the streets of New York City. And then in my later in my career, I was about 19 years old. I went to serve in the United States Air Force. And that arrogance got bigger. You know, I was almost as big as the state of Texas, and Texas is pretty big. And so when I think about who I was, that really set me up for failure. That really set me up for mistakes. That really set me up for lessons that needed to be learned. But I got to tell you, there were a lot of mistakes that, didn't allow me to grow because I didn't learn from those mistakes, right? Yeah. And really, when you talk about them, the first time you do something wrong, it's a mistake. The next time you do the same thing, it's a choice because you knew it was a mistake. And I was making those choices to make those mistakes.
Yeah.
So then as I started to get into the leadership world, I was leading people with aggression. I was leading people with egotism. I was leading people with that you work for me. Kind of it's my way or the highway mentality. Yeah. And that did not serve the workforce. That did not serve the people who I was responsible for. And that caused me a lot of challenge in being successful as a leader. And it wasn't until you learn the art and science of leadership that you say, I guess I've been wrong all these years. And that's kind of my transformation.
So was it an overnight realization that the style wasn't working, or was it a gradual, all of the mistakes wearing you down and thinking that maybe there's a better way?
Yeah, I mean, it was all the mistakes. As I mentioned, I was kind of making the same mistakes multiple times. And, I wrote a book about it, Ultimate Leadership, 10 Rules for Success. And these were the rules, Simon, that I had to develop to be a successful leader. And rule number one, never allow your emotions to dictate your actions. How do you think I learned that rule? I allowed my emotions to dictate my actions. And I got to tell you, there was one time where that happened for me. And that cloud followed me around for about a decade, that I was a hothead, and I would explode and blow up and point my fingers at the workforce. And, even people were transitioning out of the organization, but the new people that would come in would hear the stories of that one time that I was aggressive and I was inappropriate and I was unprofessional. So as you now start to think about these rules you have to develop, rule number two, don't waste time and energy on things you can't control. Again, how many times did I have to do that? Rule number three, there are no problems, just solutions. Stop pointing your finger at people and just fix the problem. So it really is a transformation over the years that as you start to realize, stop doing these things and learn from these mistakes and reflect on what you're doing. And that's what we don't do enough, Simon. I don't think we spend enough time reflecting on our successes, on our failures, on our mistakes, on our lessons learned to determine how do we grow from those things. Rule number seven, experience comes from mistakes. Mistakes come from lack of experience. Yeah. And again, these are things that we have to be able to learn. So that's a long way. I mean, one of the things that I didn't never transformed of giving short answers. But one of the things that you have to remember is it was a transformation, probably over 10 or 12 years, to finally get to a point of saying, you were horrible as a leader. Try to do better.
Yeah. And do you know what? That resonates with some of the work that I do with clients in organizations where they don't reflect enough on the lessons of the recent change. So they just go headlong into the next change, and there's no time to reflect and understand what worked and what didn't work. And so there's so much wasted energy. Quite often, when you talk to, you'll hear people in the workforce say, oh, yeah, we did that before, and, you know, don't worry, it'll pass, or we don't have to worry about this. They've been around this loop before. And it's true. They've actually been around exactly the same loop because they didn't learn the lessons from previous to do it differently. And so that resonates. Your personal experience is what organizations go through in the change domain as well.
You know, I think you're absolutely right, Simon. But one of the things that helped me, and it sounds really stupid, and it was stupid when I started to do it, was, and someone actually, a mentor actually told me, was journaling, was actually writing my thoughts out. Was at the end of the day, I spend, you know, 5 or 10 minutes just writing an overview of my day. Because when you talk about it going from one change to another, and we're not reflecting on those things, it's because who taught us how to do that? And then, you know, we're so busy at the end of the day, we don't remember the things that we did. Or in the weekend, when we're sitting in our favorite chair with our favorite toddy, looking out at our favorite view, we're not thinking about those things. But I would have my book with me on those weekends or later in the evening, and I would say, oh, that's right, this guy did push my buttons today. Or, oh, that's right, I did, you know, jump to conclusions and I didn't get all the information. And then I would say, okay, when this happens again, how do I address that? And I got to tell you that it isn't that quick, because the next time that happened, I made the same mistake a couple of times before I said, ding, that's the same situation that caught me the last time. But know that that's okay, because that's part of that growth process.
So you say that it wasn't a quick transition for you. What sort of time frame do you think it was between starting to explore the ideas of personal growth and feeling like, now I know that you're probably one of those people like me that feel like the job's never done, but how long did it take for you to feel at least competent and you weren't making the same mistakes all over again?
I got to tell you, Simon, I think, and you're absolutely right. You know, John Maxwell in the 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership, which I think is a foundational book that everybody should have in their bookcase. Rule number 3 is the law of progress. And leadership doesn't develop in a day, but leadership develops daily. And that journey is never over. But I got to tell you, man, I think this has to be a 10 or 12 year transition for me. Because, you know, as I mentioned just a few minutes ago, I would make the same mistakes again and again before I kept clicking to say, you know, oh, that was that. You know, and I grew up in my young career, I was a paramedic. I worked on an ambulance and I wanted to try to become the best caregiver that I could. And so patients will present to you, they'll have symptoms, they'll have, you know, signs of conditions. And one of the things that I had to learn in my career was, oh, this is what this is. Oh, that's right. That's right. Let me check their abdomen to make sure that they don't have, or, oh, I would expect to see this when I draw their blood, or, you know, their heart monitor should say this, right? But that even took me a couple times to figure out that this was the same presentation of that patient a few months ago, right? But you trip over that a couple times before you say, dang, it was that thing again. Until you finally say, all right, I'm not going to get caught on this time. I'm going to go ahead and look for that. Well, maybe it was there. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe it wasn't. But at least I was now paying attention to it more, right? Well, it's the same thing with leadership. And when you try to inspire people, when you try to motivate people, or when you use your skills in delegation of authority or trying to be decisive, you know, you catch yourself by saying, oh, wait a minute. This is that same situation that we, you know, blew up in our face the last time. How do I do this differently? But that takes time, right? That doesn't happen in a month. And, you know, going back to your question, as I babble again, you know, we talk about maybe 10 or 12 years, but finally, before you finally put you on a path to say, I feel comfortable, but I know that I'm still going to make mistakes along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's fast forward then a few years, and you're now a leadership coach, you're a leadership author, you're a leadership speaker. You're doing all those things to help other people acquire the skills and the mindset to be great leaders. How does your own lived experience affect the way that you, specifically affect the way that you coach people? So, you know, your experience was you would make mistake after mistake after mistake. With your support, what would potentially be different for somebody who's learning these skills for the first time?
You know, I think that that's what we do in our space, right? I mean, Simon, you know, you're the change man. And when people come to you, you're sharing your expertise on how to mitigate the challenges that come around change. And I want to talk to you about some of those things, I think, in a little bit, right? But I think that one of the things that we do is we share our wisdom. Our wisdom is our experience. Our wisdom is our foresight on what we've done in our career. And one of the things that I had to learn to do to be a successful coach and help people grow in their professional development was become a student of people. One of the things that we don't do well enough is when we teach, and you know, I started off as an instructor, teaching people about how to be the best, you know, the best medicine they can give, the best paramedic that they can be. But one of the things that we do wrong as leaders, as teachers, is we teach how we learn best, right? So different learning styles, but I teach you the way I learn the best, or I hire people that are like me, right? So we do that, and we do these wrong things. So one of the things that I wanted to do was become a student of people, that when I talk to you, that I can understand your learning style, that when I talk to you, I can understand your strengths and weaknesses. And then that allows me to build a custom program for you. One of the things that I think is interesting when it comes to leadership consultants is they come with all this canned material. And they're going to pick this box up and they're going to bring it into your organization. And then they're going to open up and just give you things, right? My success is in the lane of, I want to be able to develop something that's custom for you, custom for your organization, custom for your mission, custom for your vision. And so now my experience is all the successes and all the failures and all the lessons learned and all the mistakes. I need to wrap that up into a bow for you personally and not just say, all right, well, you know, I tried this 100 times and it doesn't work. But rather say, I tried this 100 times, but it doesn't work. But who's to say it doesn't work the 101st time? Give it a shot. Right. So I think that that's where that's helped me.
Brilliant. So what are you working on at the moment? Obviously KLDR, but outside of the radio station, where's your, leadership journey taking you?
Yeah, it's always, for me, it's always a journey of self, self-development. It's always a journey of getting myself to a different level. You know, we have to be able to grow our knowledge and grow our effectiveness if we want to be able to grow the people who are around us. As soon as we become stagnant as leaders, as soon as we become stagnant as coaches, as soon as we become stagnant as mentors, we've got nothing left to teach people because we have to continually grow. So one of the other things that I'm working on is, besides my own professional growth, is I'm building a 10-week course on self-mastery, and I want to be able to offer that. And one of my pet projects, Simon, that I've been working on really for 5 years, is I want to be able to develop a course on how people can promote themselves, right? So in their own professional development with an executive presence, or how can they use social media to promote their business or promote their service or promote their wares, or how to write their own book. Everybody's got a book title in them, right? You're an author. I've read your book. I don't have a signed copy of it yet, but we'll talk about that later. But how do they do that, right? Because people want to be able, everybody's got a book title in them. So I'm working on that right now. But my clients keep me busy, my projects keep me busy, and it's the great place to be.
Fantastic. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing the evolution of that product. That sounds really cool, because I do a lot of work helping people at major transition points in their careers. And so I'm sure that that'll be a nice thing to refer them on to if what they're up to is all about building their reputation. That'd be really good. Chris, I understand that you want to turn the spotlight back around and ask me a few questions. I'm not sure if I'm ready for this, but over to you, sir.
No, I think, you know, one of the things that I'm a fan of the show. I love the Change Show. And, you know, you've got a lot of great, you know, great stats and a lot of listeners. But I want to learn more about, you know, who you are in this process of being the change man. I mean, you live in the United Kingdom. I live in the United States. And as you talk to your guests, it always gives me more questions than from your side than answers. So I thought, since I'm coming here, this would be a great time to interview you and learn a little bit more about what makes you tick from a change side. Because change is one of these things that we have to be able to ensure that we do great in organizations, and we'll even talk about individual. But, you know, Simon, one of the things that I want to learn is, how did you get into this change space? So when you think about, everybody has their niche of expertise, you settled on something that is vital. It's paramount to the success of an organization. How did you get here?
Well, it all started with the artist formerly known as Anderson Consulting, now Accenture. So I joined them. And at the time, change management was quite new. And in fact, there were only about 30 people involved in change management for the whole of the UK. And I joined them as part of their emerging team at that point at which change management was thought to be the thing you did at the end of a project. So let's say you were building a new system for an organization. Right at the end, it's like, we're probably going to have to train a few people now so that they can use this system. But fast forward about 8 years, I think I was there, 8.5 years. By the time I left, change management had evolved to the extent that change was the thing that you thought about up front. It was the thing that was like, do we actually need a new system, let alone should we get on and build one? And let's talk to people, let's find out what they really need. And so that was my education in change. My formal education was, I was a history student at St. Andrews University, so it was nothing to do with change. But I'd been through quite a few changes myself. And the thing that really appealed to me about change management was that it was all about people. So I wasn't a business major. I wasn't somebody who, you know, really understood business, to be honest. But I did have an intuition about people. And I love being in and around and supporting people. So this sounded like the perfect career for me. And I loved it ever since. So even when I set myself up, I wanted to do more work with people. And although I ended up writing a book about time management, that was really just so that I could continue working with people who were maybe struggling with being effective with their time. So it was always with that sort of service mentality. And I've then, you know, over the years of being out in my own business since about 2000, all of my work has been in that zone of, can I help individuals? So although a lot of my work is with organizations and with teams, I'm always seeing the individual. I'm always seeing that person who's struggling getting into the new team, or somebody who's struggling to make their way as a new leader with that team, or somebody maybe in an executive level thinking, I've never had this amount of responsibility before. All of those are significant personal changes, and I'm always there to help and support people in those arenas.
Yeah, and I think if you think about that answer, which I think is incredible, it's kind of what I talked about in the first segment, where we develop custom programs for people, right? Yeah. You think about the individual, you're developing what the individual needs for their success. It's kind of, and this is where I think the successful people in this space are, is it's really about the person that you're dealing with. So when you engage with an organization, What do you think's the biggest misconception about change? I mean, change is one of those words, Simon. Ooh, we got to change. People get a little bit crazy with it. And there's a lot of reasons, a lot of psychological reasons that people don't like change. But what do you think's the biggest misconception?
So I think up until the pandemic, most leaders inside organizations just thought that change would happen automatically. We're going to put a new system in, we're going to change a process, we're going to merge with another organization, we're going to downsize, we're going to do all these different things, and it'll just happen and people will get along with it. When people don't get along with it, when there are challenges, that's when they typically turn to people like myself and other people who are there in those sort of consulting roles to say, can you help us with the change? By then, it's usually too late. Organizations, though, that get ahead of themselves and say, actually, it's not about a process or a way of doing things. It's actually about the culture of the organization. It's about what values do we share. It's about our vision. Those are the zones in which the more forward-looking organizations would get me in to think about and help them and facilitate processes, if you like, that help those things emerge inside the organization. So one, they usually haven't put enough effort into it and think it's going to happen automatically. Or the other common trait is people think it's going to take a couple of months to do major organizational transformation. And invariably, it's going to take 18 months to 2 years before you're going to see any real benefits of the type of work that I do. So a lot of my work up front is just managing those expectations with clients so that they can understand and start to look for the shoots, the little green shoots of change, so that they can be a little bit more patient about what they're hoping to see. So it's similar to your process in terms of things do not happen overnight. We can have an insight that happens in the moment, but in terms of it actually working through and becoming a new way of working, that's going to take some time.
Yeah, and I think that makes perfect sense. And there's so many things to unwrap in that answer. I don't even know where to give you the next question. But, you know, so I guess the curiosity for me would be, if someone engages with you, if an organization, let's talk about a company, if a company engages with you and they say, you know, we've got to go through this process. I mean, what's your process to really kind of develop that program for them? Because I'm sure it's like I was saying, you have to develop custom to the organization. But what's the process that if I engage with you and bring you into the organization, how do you help me?
So I developed a methodology. There was a famous advert in the UK where a woman, it was for a telephone company, and she phones somebody and says, "Oh, my daughter's now got an ology." it was a qualification at university level. But I created a methodology around change just based on my repeated experience of seeing what makes change work and what are the problems that people typically encounter. So I created something called the Delta Model. It doesn't mean that I come in, like you said before, and it's just off the shelf. What the Delta Model helps me do and helps me engage with clients on is understanding where they are right now in the process of change, what needs to have happened if it hasn't already, or what should we be doing next. And so it's still absolutely the client's problem that's front and center, or the client's opportunity that's front and center, but the methodology just helps me have a conversation with them so that they can see what's next and what's coming up and what they need to plan out. So that I would say the core underpinning tenet, if you like, of the Delta Model is it's all about people. So the model, every step of the Delta, which is an acronym of diagnose, engage, lead, transform, and accelerate. So it's not that they're necessarily sequential, but certainly the first three is where all the effort is, in the diagnosing of the issues, being clear on what the problems are, engaging people so that we're engaging is not just telling them what we're going to do, but getting them involved in thinking about what is possible and what they would like to happen. And then we're on to lead, which is, can we get clear all of the problems that might get in the way And then we're on to what I call the downhill side of the triangle, because think of a delta triangle. The downhill bit is actually, if you've done all of that work up front, transformation and then accelerating and sustaining should be a downhill job.
Yeah, I think that makes all great sense. And, you know, it seems like you've developed the, you know, the go-to model of how you can bring people through that process. And I think what is really awesome about that as well is that's something you leave them with, right? So as things happen, they're able now to use the Delta model, you know, that you've taught them in the future of what the organization may look like for change. But I'm going to assume as well that you're just not an organizational guy, right? I mean, you probably help individuals in change. I mean, you asked me about how did I transform my leadership style from being, I'm going to say, poor to being, you know, a specialist. I don't think I'm an expert by any means, but I think I specialize in leadership. So how do you help the individual go from, you know, maybe being a poor professional into, you know, getting to where their vision is and where they see themselves in the future?
Yeah, and I think this is where I really light up, Chris, because for me, it's all about the individual. I mean, I founded a group called the Change Maker Group, which was there to help grow and nurture and develop and support people that have a desire to make change happen, either in their own lives or to support the people around them. And so for me, working with individuals is really where I get excited, because you just don't know. It's a bit like you can see the number of apples on a tree, but you can't know how many apples are in the seed that you plant. And so when you're working with an individual, you don't know what they're going to do next. But if I can help them through this transition. So, for example, I do support a lot of people who are at that major crossroads in their career, where maybe they've been doing something for the last 15 years and suddenly woken up and thought, well, how on earth did I get here? You know, this wasn't meant to be. This wasn't what I envisaged as a young person. And so it's like, how can I reconnect them with their dreams? And once they're there, how can we plan together and work out a route by which they're going to navigate the next part of their career or the next career? Because I was working with a bunch of youngsters recently, and the estimate for people leaving school right now is they're going to have 7 careers, Chris. So, you know, it's not about, okay, I've been doing this for 5 years. What will my skills enable me to do in this particular career next? It's actually more about, who are you? What is it that you dream of? What is it that you want to do? What's the impact you want to make on the world? And once you're clear on that, what then could you do? It could be any number of things. And that's the area I like to inhabit with people. It's an area people don't like to be in general, because that's ambiguity, that's uncertainty. I love being in that space. And so if I can pass on that energy and help other people, then, you know, then we can get somewhere.
No, I think you're right. And it is a very, very uncomfortable place, right? But we have to be able to be comfortable with being uncomfortable to get outside the comfort zone of getting into a new comfort zone. So we just got a couple minutes here before we take the break, Simon, and I'll hand it back to you. But give me one or two tips. There are people listening out there, individuals that are saying, you know what, maybe that's me. Maybe I'm a little ambiguous as to what my future. Give them one or two tips on how to start the march before they give you the call and say, Simon, give me a hand. What do you leave them with?
It's always, you know, when you say give me one or two things, I got 100 things buzzing around my head. I think spend some time looking at what you really enjoy. Don't even think about a career. Don't even think about your job. Just ask yourself, what do you really enjoy? What activities do you find yourself just lost in the activity? Capture some of those, because there may be some hints in there as to what you might want to do next. There's such diversity at the moment in terms of the range of career opportunities that there are out there. This incredibly mad changing world is uncovering all sorts of opportunities that people have never even considered before. I mean, I was, again, another anecdote from this workshop I was doing with these youngsters. The majority of careers that are opening up and are going to be available by 2025 didn't even exist 2 or 3 years ago. So it's like there's so much opportunity, but the only way you're going to narrow that down is by paying more attention. And it's back to your point about writing things down, Chris, in the moment. Pay attention. What do you enjoy doing? It might just be running team meetings. It might just be the final polishing of a presentation. It doesn't really matter what it is, but make a note, because those are going to be the clues as to where you might want to go next. So I would say definitely do that. Other than that, just chat to people and ask them what they think.
Well, I think that those are good tips. And I got to tell you, I'd learned a lot. I still have more questions. So you're probably going to need to come on my show, Leadership 101, so we can kind of talk more about it. But I'm going to hand you back the reins of the Change Show and see what you got for me in the third segment.
The third part of the show is typically where I ask my guests to talk about a significant change in their life and how they navigated that. But I think we sort of covered that in the first part of the show, didn't we? So I tell you what, I loved your question when you asked me, so what are your tips? But let's do a slight variation on that. What are the typical tools that you draw on when you're supporting and helping people in their transformation into great leaders?
Oh my goodness, Simon, that's I think what makes you a great radio host is you always come up with these good questions. And I guess, you know, I really, when we start to think about change of an individual, and that's really why they engage with us, is that they know that they have potential, and they want to be able to, you know, chisel that potential out of them, out of their current self. And one of the things that I always say as a leadership specialist, as a coach, is sometimes we've got to see the greatness in people before they see it in themselves, right? And we can sit across from those people and we know that there's greatness in them. Les Brown says that all the time, right? You have greatness in you. And one of the things that I think is important for people is just to listen to who they are. I just picked up a new coaching client this week, and we spent an hour of just me learning what motivates them and what inspires them. And I asked them poignant questions. And if you're listening, go ahead and write these down. You know, we kind of talked about journaling, right? And go ahead and take a piece of paper, and maybe it's the newspaper you got in front of you. Maybe it's a napkin, whatever it is. And I want to know, when we talk about it, when we engage about your change, I want to know who you are. So think about it and put that into a little bit of a elevator speech of where you've come from, what you've done in your life, and where do you think you're going. Then the next thing I want to know is, what motivates you? What is it that gets you out of bed in the morning that makes you want to go through your day? What is the motivation? Maybe it's your family. Maybe it's your children. Maybe it's, you know, wanting to, you know, make money so you can eventually, you know, have a security in your, but what motivates you? The next thing I want to know is, what inspires you? Because inspiration and motivation are two different things. A lot of people put them together and they think that inspiration is motivation and vice versa. It really isn't. What inspires you isn't necessarily what motivates you, right? My motivation is I want to make sure I'm feeding my children. I want to make sure I'm able to pay for my home. I want to make sure I'm putting money. But what inspires me is people who are positive. What inspires me is people who are humble, who are charitable. That inspires me to be a better man. Doesn't motivate me, but it inspires me. And maybe I take some of that inspiration. The next thing you want to write down and you want to answer the question is, what is your dream job? If you can create your own job, what would it be? And the reason that I ask that question is this is what's going to go into the vision of who you are as a person. You think about change. Change happens with a vision, right? Change happens with who you see yourself being. Change happens with who the organization you're working for you want to be, or the project you're trying to create. It's all about that vision. And in the absence of a vision, we don't know where we're going. And we certainly won't know when we get there, right? If I ask you to think about a door, you don't see the letters D-O-O-R. You actually picture a door. We are wired to think in pictures. And in the absence of a vision, we are lost. Then after you create the vision, you now want to be able to create the goals to reach the vision. You know, one of my goals is I want to be able to speak in front of 10,000 people. I got that as a long-term goal. I've never spoken in front of 10,000 people. How do I get there? Well, you know what? I probably have to hone my speaking skills. I probably have to have more people in my network. I probably have to be, and these are now things that I need to work towards. If I want my vision to become a reality, I've got to be able to get there. But that's all part of your dream job. That's all part of where you see yourself. And maybe your dream job is to be an astronaut. Well, if you're not in the astronaut program, you got a problem. You got to be able to create those goals, Simon. So I think that those are the things that I would help a person to kind of figure out in that transformation. So the other thing that I want to know is your strengths and weaknesses. You know, when you think about your strengths, these are your powerhouses. These are the things, you know, you're Robin Hood and you're pulling these arrows out of your quiver and you're hitting the mark every single time. But then with the good always comes the bad. And what are your weaknesses? And how do your weaknesses affect you? More importantly, how do your weaknesses affect your strengths? So just because you think your strength is communication, but you have poor presentation skills as a weakness, oh, I don't want to stand up in front of people and talk. Do you really have communication as a strength? Because now that weakness is working against that. And then you want to be able to polish those weaknesses. And I don't like to call them weakness. Let's stop calling them weaknesses. Let's call them challenges, Simon, because I think that they're we can overcome those things. And then finally, we're able now to put all that together. And after you've written that down, I want you to go ahead and just look at it. And I want you to use the term why. Well, why is this my inspiration? Why is this my motivation? Why is this a strength? Why is this a weakness? And understand the why. And then I always put people on the path of emotional intelligence and understanding their own self-awareness. When you have mindfulness in all these areas, Simon, you are going to be able to start the process of moving to where you want to go and changing who you are as a person. How was that?
Not bad at all. What are you doing in the second half of the conversation with them?
I could come up with more. I got a lot of more.
I bet you have. And you know what? You finished there on emotional intelligence and self-awareness. And sometimes I think that's where it all starts, isn't it? Because if without some self-awareness and some ways of building self-awareness, because as we said earlier, when we were talking about the fact that people don't capture what they're learning along the way, what they have learned and don't think about it in the moment and then it just passes. Those are the opportunities to build your self-awareness. It's in the moment. It's when you've just had a poor result, or you've done something that didn't quite resonate with the other people around you. That's the opportunity to build your self-awareness, because only in those moments will you actually be able to see opportunities for learning. Because you talk about challenges. I have a similar beef, if you like, with the term failure. So I never see things as failure. I see them as learning opportunities, and they're opportunities for me to gather more information. But unless I have that mindset that says, this is a learning opportunity, I'm not going to be motivated to write it down or to think about it. I'm actually just going to carry on as if it didn't happen. And so, you know, it's interesting that that was there, as you say, in a role that sort of underpins everything else.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And I say this all the time. I think self-awareness and mindfulness is the most important leadership characteristic for your success, right? Because it makes no difference if you're good in change management. It makes no difference if you're good in conflict resolution. It makes no difference if you have good communication skills. If you have poor self-awareness, that is going to ruin all the other skills that you have. If you blow up, if you're not decisive, if you don't know how to inspire, if you don't know how to motivate, you know, it makes no difference how good your communication skills are. You're going to fail every single time. So one of the things that I like to work with people on is how to reflect on their own situations, how to have good mindfulness or self-awareness, because that is the crux of who you're going to be as a person. And that is the crux of who people are going to want to follow. And I always put people on that path. So I agree with you 100%.
Yeah. Remind me at some point, Chris, to tell you all about Motivate Cars, because one of the things I found with people when they're trying to understand what motivates them is they have so few words. It's like, what motivates me? And they just glaze over, can't quite think of it. Motivate Cards has got 48 dimensions, and it enables people to just move the cards around and get a sense of, and there's a bit of a a light bulb moment, and suddenly a lot of things make sense because they've now got the language for it. But that's one of the challenges I found with people with understanding motivation, is that they don't get granular enough, and they think that it's some sort of overarching driver, but actually it's usually something quite dynamic that's going on for them. Maybe we can talk about that on Leadership 101, who knows? Chris, thanks for that. That was really energized. The thing that comes over to me when I listen to your show, when I listen to you here in this interview, is the volume of energy that you have. And I think that is unmistakable. I think in terms of my own self-awareness is that my energy levels are not at that level. And it's a different type of energy. So I don't beat myself up for it because it's something that I've become accustomed to, and I integrate it into the way that I work with people. But for me, the overriding impact of listening to Chris is that there's this just huge volume of energy that comes across, and I'm sure that must be really energizing for your clients too.
Yeah, one of the things that I always live on is I just don't want them to hear me. I want them to feel it. Yeah. And I think that's where I come from all the time.
Yeah. Brilliant. Well, what would you say is the craziest thing you've done recently?
Probably this show. I mean, this has got to be the craziest thing I've ever done. You know, no, I'm just kidding, Simon. I think it's just continuing to be an inspiration and motivation. I don't know that it's crazy, but it's something that's unwavering. And I just continue down the path of being who I am and doing what I do. And hopefully one day someone's going to look at me and shake my hand and say, you know, Chris, because of you, I didn't quit.
Yeah, brilliant. And it reminds me of a quote I saw recently. It wasn't really a quote, but it was an insight. And it was about the notion of risk, which, you know, people, when they're saying, are you crazy, they're probably concerned for you and the level of risk you're taking on board. But this was just putting risk into perspective. It says, look, we're all going to die. So is it really all that risky? As long as it's not life-threatening, it probably isn't that risky at all. So let's get on and enjoy this thing called life. Chris, this has been a hugely enjoyable hour for me. So thank you so much for coming on and being my special guest here today on The Change Show. It's been a real honor to spend some time with you.
The honor is all mine. It's great to be with you, Simon, and cheers to you and the work that you do for our listeners. And I look forward to your shows every week.
Brilliant. Thanks, Chris. That was Chris Sebelaro. This has been The Change Show with Simon Phillips. Go and have a brilliant, inspired week, and we'll see you back here next time. Take care.